in Pittsburgh. The Wall Street Journal reports Cowboys owner Jerry Jones is asking for a special league meeting with other owners to talk about Commissioner Roger Goodell's contract extension negotiations. The Associated Press obtained a letter this week in which Jones is accused of sabotaging those negotiations. Dr. Ferdy Pacheco was a corner man and friend for Muhammad Ali for more than 15 years, but he left Ali after he kept boxing against Pacheco's advice. Ferdy Pacheco, the fight doctor, died today at age 89.
Friday with Greeny and Golic. After nearly two decades, it's the last show of Mike and Mike. Tune in for the final show starting at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2.
Guys, come into the JCPenney men's store and find great looks for all those holiday parties. Now through Sunday, get 60% off select styles of men's outerwear, hats, and gloves starting at just $6.99. Refresh your holiday wardrobe with 60% off men's sport coats, top coats, and dress pants starting at $23.99. We've got your style and size in-store and at jcp.com. Plus, the holiday challenge is here. Get everything on your list for less than you think. Hurry in. JCPenney.
Offers represent savings on regular or original prices. While supplies last, some exclusions apply. See store at jcp.com for details.
AutoZone presents the oil change. Regular oil changes protect your engine from wear and tear, helping your car roll well beyond the 100,000-mile mark. Right now, save on 5 quarts of Castrol Edge Full Synthetic or High Mileage and an STP Extended Life Filter for $26.99 or upgrade to a Mobil 1 filter for $3 more. So visit your local AutoZone. With over 5,000 locations, the right supplies and good advice are just around the corner. Let's get you what you need. See store for restrictions and details.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Kevin Kugler here from Westwood One with a preview of Sunday Night Football, a marquee matchup of young quarterbacks coming up as the 5-4 Cowboys host the 8-1 Eagles. Can Dak Prescott in Dallas pick up an important NFC East victory without Ezekiel Elliott? Or will Carson Wentz in Philadelphia claim their 8th straight win? Join Hall of Famer Jason Taylor and me for all the action and hear the NFL all season from Westwood One.
NFL Sunday Night Football presented by Mediacom. The Cowboys host the Eagles Sunday night at 6:30 on 107.5 and 106.3 FM KGYM.
The Final Lap with Kerry Murphy is on NASCAR News now.
Since it's most likely Matt Kenseth's final time in a Cup Series car this weekend, it appears that Joe Gibbs Racing thought it would be nice to offer him a one-race send-off paint scheme, as opposed to the retirement tour that other drivers have been getting. His number 20 car will feature his rookie season DeWalt colors this weekend at Homestead. Kyle Larson was named to the Forbes 30 Under 30 sports list recently, and one of the reasons they cited for listing him was his 12 top two finishes this season. Just think about that for a second. Kyle is 25, so he's got a few more years to actually stay on this list. Okay, Homestead stats for the final four drivers going for the championship this weekend. Kevin Harvick has 16 starts at this track, 8 top fives and a win. Kyle Busch has 12 starts, 2 top fives and a win. Martin Truex Jr. has 12 starts, 3 top fives but no wins. And same thing for Brad Keselowski, no wins in 9 starts and only 2 top fives. Justin Allgaier is racing his teammates for the Xfinity Series Championship this weekend, so does that level the playing field at all?
Not that the playing field is ever not even, but, you know, we know what we're up against. You know, we understand what's in their cars. We know what they've got for an engine. You know, we know all that stuff. Whereas with the other competitors, you never really know what they're thinking or work in a gray area to make something happen or whatever. You know, you never really know that. So for us, at least we know where everybody's at, and we know that it's all by the book, and we can go out there and race each other hard and clean and have a lot of fun with it.
TheFinalLap.com.
Staples knows you can't afford to have your business slow down over the holidays. New customers aren't delivered down your chimney. You won't find new accounts in your stocking. No, just because it's the holidays doesn't mean you can stop marketing your company. So promote your business with eye-catching print materials, like presentations, brochures, postcards, and promotional products from Staples. And now save 20% off print and marketing services orders of $50 or more. Sounds like you got at least one thing on your holiday list. Staples. It's pro time. Exclusions apply. Ends 12/2/17.
The JCPenney Holiday Challenge is here. Get everything on your list for less than you think. Shop pre-Black Friday deals Thursday through Sunday. Prices so low, you don't need a coupon. Deals like 60% off coats for him and jackets for her, and 60% off Carter sleepwear. Plus $9.99 select tops for the family and a new K15 Keurig coffee maker, just $49.99. Black Friday starts now. JCPenney. Offers valid 11/16 to 11/18. Offers represent savings on regular or original prices. While supplies last, some exclusions apply. See store jcp.com for details.
Oh, we got intrigue in Tennessee, according to WNML Sports Radio, The Animal. Detroit Lions offensive coordinator Jim Bob Cooter could be interested in the Tennessee gig. He's no John Gruden. 319-366-1600, that's the number to reach us at on the Hertine and Stocker text line. Hertine and Stocker located at 101 South Dubuque Street in Iowa City. Stop on by, take a look inside those famous windows, and open the door, pop in, tell one of the members of the Dickens family that you heard about him on KGYM Radio. 106.3 FM in Iowa City, 107.5 FM in Cedar Rapids, our South and North Gym frequencies with you until 6:45 tonight. 1600 AM currently, Iowa State leading Appalachian State. That game is in the second half. Our pal Chris Williams and Brent Bloom calling the action from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Coming up for you tomorrow, Iowa City West in action, Regina in action, lots of high school football coming your way from the Uni Dome in Cedar Falls, and it all starts tonight with Cedar Rapids Xavier taking on Pella. Scott Unash tweeting out a picture moments ago. Mark Farley and the UNI Panthers just finishing up their nightly practice, and it'll be time for high school football here before you know it on KGYM. Stop by the website, KGYMradio.com, and vote in the Emil's Hideaway poll question today. It has to do with Major League Baseball and pace of play announcements that Rob Manfred made today in talking with the media. Emil's Hideaway is on First Avenue Southeast behind Taco John's, next to the Home Depot. And if you were looking for a place to eat tonight, would you consider Emil's Hideaway?
It's now time for everyone's favorite weekly segment.
Would you rather know when you're going to die, or would you rather know how you're going to die?
But why would you even say that? A shock value?
Can you give yourself a ding?
It's as simple as a yes or no.
Of course you would. Who wouldn't?
Would you?
All right. If you've listened to the program the last couple days, you know we've talked a lot about the coaching carousel that's about to spin or is already spinning off its axis in the college football world. So, Alex Kuhn, let's just go ahead and start. I know you've been following these more closely than I have, but would you take the Tennessee job if you were John Gruden? And if so, what would it take you to come down from the TV booth?
If I am inserting myself into his shoes, then there's no chance that I'm taking the Tennessee job. The stress that goes along with that job, partnered with the fact that he has one of the best jobs in the world right now. He announces football games once a week and gets to watch and be around football all the time and makes $8 to $10 million a year doing it. And the college coaching lifestyle, he hasn't been in college football in 26 years. It's just not one that I would want be in any hurry to get back into. And this brings me back to a case right here in Iowa City. Former assistant coach at Iowa, Eric Johnson, decided that he didn't want to coach anymore. He was going to go open up a chain or take over a chain restaurant.
Did I tell you that story about said chain?
No. What about said chain?
Oh, Tyler and I thought it was a big story, and it was, and we were talking about it, and we talked a little bit too much about it, and then somebody from said restaurant brought in a bunch of food for us, and we thought it was such a nice gesture, and then I got yelled at.
Well, said chain restaurant needs to lighten up a little bit because it's to go from coaching to that. He talked about the lifestyle. You're constantly on the road recruiting. You're constantly by your phone. You're away from your family, and it just I wouldn't be in any hurry to do it. But it sounds like John Gruden is at least weighing the option.
My first thing is that Alex made a great point. He's got a great gig as it is. From all that I can gather, he's one of the highest paid figures at all of ESPN, still remaining. He calls football once a week, and in his free time, he seems to watch a lot of film, which is what he loves to do. So, from as far as I can tell, he's doing all sorts of things that he just wants to do right now. He's doing nothing other than what he wants to, and so
if he's going to come out of the booth, give up that gig, I just don't know why Tennessee is the school to do it at. I just had to look up his history. He was a grad assistant there in 1986 to 87. If there's a deeper tie to the school than that, then I didn't find it in my very superficial search. But I just don't know why Tennessee would be the program. You know, there's a lot bigger brands that he could go to, and things would be a lot less stressful because he would be signing up for a really hard job. Tennessee has an entire rebuild ahead of them. And, you know, if I'm John Gruden, then if I want to coach, then I'm going to go somewhere else. So, I mean, to answer the question, if I'm John Gruden, do I take the Tennessee job? No.
Somebody on the text line says Jim Bob Cooter is a very SEC name. Well, of course it is.
Yes,
he was the backup quarterback to Peyton Manning at the University of Tennessee. And his official God-given name is James Robert Cooter.
Can you tell me who the starter in front of Peyton Manning his freshman year was? Trivia question for all of you out there.
Todd Helton.
Yes.
Former Colorado Rocky.
What?
Yep. Correct.
And I know that for a number of reasons, including the fact that my former co-host went to the same high school, although not at the same time as Todd Helton, who likes to head to the local convenience store and pick up lottery tickets while he's been drinking. Wine, red wine, if I remember that story correctly.
With Albert Hainsworth? Oh, no, I'm mixing stories.
We go from the Tennessee job to Florida. Kyle, would you pull the trigger on Chip Kelly if you were the Florida Gators?
Well, there is actually what I was just talking about is John Gruden. He's got a big reputation. Why would you go to a little school? It's the total opposite. You got Chip Kelly, big reputation, big name, and that's a big brand. He's signing up for a pretty easy job there. Recruiting is going to take care of itself. He's going to have the athletes to put in his system, which we've already seen is dominant at the college level. I don't know what other offers he might have on the table, but Florida has got to be right up there.
Can you ask the question again? I'm trying to figure out which perspective it was again. I don't want to ruin this.
If you were Florida,
okay,
would you pull the trigger on Chip Kelly?
Okay. No.
He's got the show cause. There's the SEC rule about having to go get the approval of the conference commissioner. And there's some baggage with Chip Kelly. Now, he's a very successful coach. Plus, he's not tied down like other coaches are right now. So if you wanted to get a jump on things like recruiting, putting a staff together, maybe you wanted to even have him in place for the postseason.
No, I would not, because I've already made this proclamation. Scott Frost is going to be the next coach at the University of Florida. He already has the ties to Florida. He's going to take over that job instead of Nebraska, and he would be a better option right now than Chip Kelly because of all the reasons you just listed. The baggage, the show cause, the fact that the baggage comes from improprieties recruiting in the state of Florida. And because of all of that, I would stay away from him, especially since there is somebody right in your backyard that seems to want to go to your school and just so happens to be the hottest name in college football right now because of what he's done at UCF and all the coaches that he has coached under. He's ready. He's willing. He's able. He's taking over at Florida. Scott Frost, the next coach for the Gators.
Wow. Okay, let's see if you roll this momentum into this next one. Alex, would you trade National League Most Valuable Player Giancarlo Stanton if you were Derek Jeter and the Marlins? It's not Jeter's decision alone to make, but everybody is talking about Jeter as if he owns the team outright. He has a very small ownership stake, but he's handling much of the baseball operations, including firing all these team legends and then offering them to give their jobs back basically at 75% of their salary. They're making $100,000. Andre Dawson, Jack McKeon, Jeff Conine, Tony Perez, they're making $100,000. Jeter lets them go and then says, we'll bring you back on board for $25,000. But that's beside the point, that he insulted very popular players with the franchise's fans. Giancarlo Stanton named the MVP today in a very narrow win over Joey Votto. Would you trade him this offseason?
I would not. I think he's the face of the team, and there are some young players in that outfield that you can build around, and I think that the death of Jose Fernandez really does a number on that franchise as the pitching goes. But just for the bottom line, just because you're coming in and you want to cut, you want to cut payroll, you're going to get rid of the best player in the National League. He's your guy. He's a guy that would be in the middle of any lineup in baseball. And if you take what is remaining on his deal, 10 years, $295 million, which, first of all, the deal that they signed him to, unbelievable. What was 13, 14 years, over $300 million. $295 million remain on that contract for 10 years. If he were on the open market right now, he would get almost an identical contract, if not a little bit more. So I would keep him. I would build around him and continue to bring in the type of talent that they have in that outfit. Put him next to guys like Yelich and Ozuna and let them grow. Because now the ownership is much better than it was under Jeffrey Loria. I would not trade the best player in baseball. I would not trade the NL MVP, because I don't want that on my conscience. It's something that we talked about, and I think this might be to a greater degree in Anaheim. They keep talking about, they were talking about for a while, oh, would you trade Mike Trout? No, I don't want that on my resume.
By the way, today, Giancarlo Stanton and Mike Trout, they have something in common. They, Stanton, only the sixth player in Major League Baseball history to win an MVP award on a team that had a losing record. It's happened 7 times. One player won the award twice on a team with a losing record. Do you know who it was?
It wasn't Mike Trout.
And it's not Mike Trout.
You
got to go way back in the history books on this one. Ernie Banks.
Okay.
Did it twice with the Cubs. MVP, most valuable player. The Cubs team's absolutely terrible in the 50s and early 60s when Ernie Banks was at the peak of his career. By the way, Stanton, the current ownership group, they didn't negotiate that deal with Stanton. So if they want to get out from under it, maybe I'm okay with seeing them trade him. Kyle, would you trade Giancarlo Stanton if you were Derek Jeter in the Marlins? I can't believe we have to say Derek Jeter in the Marlins. This guy's a trillionaire or something.
That reminds me a little bit of when Jay-Z got in with the Nets, and everybody kept saying, oh, guys are going to go play with the Nets because they want to play with Jay-Z. He had like nothing to do with the organization. Anyway, I think the most important thing to say off top is that it depends on the return. We don't know what offers they might be getting. If they could get a haul and reset the entire farm system, get some MLB-ready players within the next year or two, then, I mean, sure. Maybe. But Alex rattled off a couple of them. I think Miami already has a little bit more talent than they get credit for. They have Christian Yelich. They have D. Gordon. They have Marcell Ozuna. They've got the makings of a decent lineup. And, I mean, you can find pitchers drafting organically. You can sign free agents. I don't think that... I'm surprised to see how eager they seem to be to get rid of him. Because, like I said, if you can get a big return for him, then maybe. But I don't think that they're in the cellar in the way that you'd think if a team would be if they're trying to get rid of their best player. I think they're closer than they're giving themselves credit for. The guy just won the MVP award. Who are you going to get that's going to be a whole lot better than him? I don't really think there's. I wouldn't do it.
They're trying to cut salary, and they said the reports are out that are saying that if they want to get high-level prospects in return, it would cost them $50 million in cash to whichever team they would trade him to. So that's $5 million a year remaining on the contract. So if you're going to pay that kind of money for a guy, you might as well keep him, because you're not going to be able to get top-level prospects without having what is a fairly sizable contract on your books regardless. So they're going to have to weigh their options, and I would say maybe lean 70-30 that he gets traded, but there's still a chance he returns to Miami.
All right, Alex, very rare that the first truly local would you is buried this deep in the game, but I like this one. Would you say Iowa is closer to the team we saw against Ohio State, or is Iowa closer to the team that we saw against Wisconsin last week?
Oh, Todd. Why are you doing this to me? No, I'm joking. You're not gonna. People aren't gonna like the answer, but
no,
we
not.
Can only go on sample size. And we can only say that this team...
I think he's going to say Wisconsin.
We can only say that this team has performed well offensively twice this year. They scored 45 against Illinois. It was up and down. They scored 31 against North Texas. We all know how that game went. Iowa State and Ohio State were the only two times this year where you could say the offense looked good. So until they put it back to back, I have to say that they're closer to what we saw against Wisconsin. Now, that is the low extreme. That was rock bottom this year for the offense. 66 yards of total offense. Rock bottom for the Kirk Ferentz era. But in their four losses, they've scored 19 points, 10 points, 10 points, and 14 points against Wisconsin, but zero offensive points in that game. And in their wins, they rattled off a couple. They scored 24 points against Wyoming. We talked about the North Texas game, and they scored 17 points against Minnesota. So sample size tells me that the offense, while showing flashes of being pretty good, is closer to the lackluster offense we saw against Wisconsin than the unbelievably historic performance we saw against Ohio State.
This is definitely a juicy question, but it's an easy answer. We can call Ohio State what it was, which is an outlier. The biggest outlier of the entire Ferentz era. We can even talk for the last 5 to 10 years. When have we ever seen a performance like that? I watched the game. I feel like I didn't even enjoy it because I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on. After it ended, we won by 30. And I was trying to figure out how. And then listening to everybody else, nobody else seemed to figure out what the heck happened. Meanwhile, how many other games do we find ourselves looking at the Hawkeyes saying, why are they running 5 yard outs on 3rd and 10? It happens all the time. They're closer to the team against Wisconsin.
I got to interrupt here because I find this too funny, but I follow Pardon My Take on Twitter, and I find those guys to be entertaining, not necessarily an endorsement of the company that they work for, but they sort of just tweeted out a would ya, because there was a news story about a 100-year-old veteran who has reached the age of 100, and he says that the secret to living to 100, he enjoys Skyline Chili. And the guys from Pardon My Take said they would rather die young than live to 100 and eat Skyline Chili.
I would
completely concur with that. God take me at an early age against eating Skyline Chili for the rest of my life. Now, Rick Swan, our friend from across the hall at Rob FM, hopefully was still on the air and didn't hear me besmirch the honor of Skyline Chili, because I know he's a big fan. Alex, a final one today. How would you punish the UCLA 3 if you were Steve Alford? They're suspended indefinitely. Indefinitely can mean a lot of things, as you know.
I'd probably suspend them for 10 games. And I come down somewhere in between what we hear from basic opinions around the country. Oh, well, they're just kids. That's one side of the realm. And then the other is, well, they should be... You should come down hard on them. They've embarrassed the school. They've embarrassed the university. They've embarrassed themselves, their families, and everybody around them. 10 games is fine. That leaves them out for several really important non-conference games against Cincinnati and then against Kentucky. And I think that's a fair punishment.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to suspend them for the whole year. 10 games to a half a game. Basically, for all the reasons that Alex just said, they made a dumb mistake. Any player would get in trouble about 10 to 15 game suspension. The only reason that this is such a big deal is because it turned into an international incident, and also because the Ball family's connected to it. If it was anybody else, it would be a 10, 12, 15 game suspension, and nobody says another thing.
That is going to do it for another edition of... special would you here.
Bonus, would
you? If you were the powers that be in Cedar Rapids, would you take another run at getting a casino built here?
No.
A bonus, would you? You can play along at home, 319-366-1600, utilizing the Hertin and Stocker text line.
Would you make another run at a casino if you were Cedar Rapids?
No, I just have always been told that the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over and over again, and expecting a different result. And so I've kind of taken that to heart, because there are a lot of times where I'm doing something that's not working over and over and over again, and I say to myself, why don't I try something different? And in this case, after, I don't know, the third or fourth time that this proposition has failed, I'm going to step away and try something completely different.
I think it would be fun to have a casino here, but that's, admittedly, I don't know enough about the economic, repercussions of that. I don't know how realistic it is. All that I do know is, like you guys have spent a lot of time saying, they've tried this several times before and it doesn't work. So, I mean, how many times do you want to sit there and bang your head on the wall?
Iowa State up handily on Appalachian State, just under 4 minutes remaining in that game. It's on 1600 AM right now. Chris Williams and Brent Bloom with the call. Iowa men at home tonight. Carver Hawkeye Arena going to be without the services of Connor McCaffrey. He's sitting this one out with an illness. They host Grambling State, tip-off set for 7 o'clock. 6:27. We'll step aside, take a quick break. We come back. Kyle's going to have another Midwest One Bank Big Board update. And we got about 12, 15 minutes to go. And we're out of here for high school football tonight. I kind of like these early dismissals. Back with more of the Todd Brommelkamp Show with Alex Kuhn on 106.3 and 107.5 FM, KGYM, back after this.
It's a rematch of the Class 4A Finals, and KGYM will have all the action this Friday night. Join Alex Kuhn and Gary Fickle Friday at 6:45 on 107.5 and 106.3 FM as number one Iowa City West takes on number two West Des Moines Dowling. The Maroons won last year's matchup and look to win their fifth straight title. The unbeaten Trojans look to stop that streak and bring the trophy back to Eastern Iowa. That's Class 4A Championship Football presented by First Federal Credit Union. Number one Iowa City West versus number two West Des Moines Dowling. Friday night at 6:45 on 107.5 and 106.3 FM, KGYM.
Kevin Harlan here from Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner and I will close out the week with another great quarterback matchup and two hot teams as Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons take on Seattle's quarterback Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Join us for what promises to be a high-flying offensive show. And hear the NFL all season long from Westwood One.
Monday Night Football, the Falcons and the Seahawks. Monday night at 7 on 107.5 and 106.3 FM, KGYM, presented by Mediacom.
6:29, welcome back in. 15 minutes away from kickoff at the Unidome. That game expected to start on time. The broadcast, I should say, start on time because the game will be starting on time. At least we hope. We have no control over such things here. High school football on the way for you tomorrow as well. It will cut short the KGYM road trip driven by Linder Tire. We'll return to the Coach's Corner Sports Pub in Iowa City. Rob Howe from HawkeyeNation.com sitting in as the guest host. Tomorrow, Alex, you're going to be in Cedar Falls at the Unidome calling a couple games. So Rob and I will hold down the fort from 4 until 6:45. Happy hour runs from 3 until 7, $2.50 domestic bottles, $2 domestic pints. Coach's Corner Sports Pub, 749 Mormon Trek Boulevard in Iowa City, the site for this week's KGYM road trip driven by Linder Tire. And remember, LenderTire.com is the place to go if you're in need of a new set of tires. There's some great coupons online right now that you can redeem at one of their three locations across the state, Grinnell, North Liberty, and Iowa City. As we mentioned, Iowa State up on Appalachian State. How are things going elsewhere in the local sports scene? We send it now to Kyle Mann. He's got your last Midwest One Bank Big Board update of the night. Midwest One, where you're the one.
Megan Gustafson and the Iowa women's basketball team cruised last night to a 105-80 victory over Northern Illinois to move to 3-0. Gustafson had a typical night with 22 points and 11 rebounds. Chase Coley also had 20 points, and Tania Davis was one assist away from a triple-double. The Iowa men will be hosting Grambling State tonight in Iowa City. That'll get started at 7 as they also try to move to 3-0. The Hawkeye football team had two players earn academic all-district honors today. Parker Hesse holds a 3.72 GPA and a degree in interdepartmental studies, while Anthony Nelson holds a 3.89 studying accounting. The team also announced former Hawkeye and Tennessee Titan Jared Klotz will be this week's honorary captain. Iowa baseball announced the signing of its 9-player class of 2018, made up of 4 JUCO transfers, as well as 5 prep players, including Cedar Rapids, Jefferson's Braden Frazier. The UNI men took care of Wartburg last night, 72-43, led by Bennett Cook with 25 points and 8 rebounds. They got the win, but where they'd been shooting pretty well from beyond the arc, they didn't look nearly as good against the Knights. They took 31 threes and made only 5. Redshirt freshman Cameron Lard and Princeton grad transfer Hans Braze are both available to Steve Prohm and the Cyclones tonight as they take on Appalachian State. Iowa State leads that game 87-77 with just under 3 minutes to go. You can hear it on 1600 AM, the historic main gym. And after our show today, we're getting off the air early because we've got a Cedar Rapids school in the 3A high school championship game. Xavier will take on Pella from the Unidome, and you can hear Scott Unash on the call on our North and South Gym FM frequencies.
No Connor McCaffrey for the Hawkeyes tonight. You think that's a hindrance against Grambling State, Alex?
I think that the odds makers in Vegas are scrambling right now. What's the line on that game?
You know what? That's a great question. I haven't seen it. I don't pay too much attention to non-conference college basketball game lines. I like to keep an eye on things once the getting gets good during Big Ten play. But
I think they'll be all right, Todd.
I think they'll be okay. I can find
us maybe.
It's not that difficult to host the show and get information at your fingertips here. You just have to know where you're looking for it. But we'll see if we can come up with that information. There is no line. No line on this game. That's how bad Grambling State is. They don't want to set a line because there's a major disparity between these two programs. That's not uncommon either.
Is Grambling State, I know they did the preseason rankings. I thought they were really close to the worst team preseason in college basketball, but I'll have to find that elsewhere as well.
All I can tell you about Grambling State is they are 0-1. They have lost to Texas Southern. Is that who they played?
VCU.
No, VCU. Texas Southern was the last game that they played last year. This is a gambling website that I'm on. It pulls up information from previous seasons. So VCU beat them 94-65 at home. And there wasn't a line for that game either. Grambling State, of course, with ties to legendary football coach Eddie Robinson. And he has ties to the University of Iowa, although I don't think that has anything to do with scheduling this game on the non-conference schedule. Do we still need to take a break? We don't. We're going to power through until we got 10.
You know what? I think it's up to us. We can do whatever we want to do. We're like the kids at recess.
I'll circle back around to Giancarlo Stanton and Joey Votto. It was very close. Votto coming in second in the National League MVP voting, but not so much in the American League voting. I would have thought that Aaron Judge would have gotten a little bit more support than he did over Jose Altuve, but I don't think he got more than a handful of first-place votes. Jose Altuve winning the American League MVP, the Astros winning the World Series, although those two things don't necessarily correlate because the voting is done before the postseason. Altuve got 27 of a possible 30 first-place votes. Judge got 2, and Jose Ramirez of the Indians, who finished 3rd in the voting ahead of Mike Trout, got 1 first-place vote. Judge did get 27 second-place votes and 1 third-place vote, but not even close. Altuve finishing with 405 points, Judge with 279, and Ramirez with 237. We mentioned Mike Trout, the former Colonel, coming in 4th. Other players in the American League, there were a lot of them getting votes. Byron Buxton got a 7th-place vote as well as a 9th and a 10th-place vote. So lots of love for a couple former Colonels out there.
You said you thought it'd be a little bit closer in the American League.
I thought Judge would get more first-place votes than 2.
Do you think that, and I know that the whole sabermetrics craze basically for those type of hitters takes out the values, doesn't take away, say that strikeouts are that big of a deal, but do you think that 208 strikeouts is what did him in? Whereas you look at Jose Altuve, and this is a guy who was not only able to put the ball in play with power, but hit the ball gap to gap and just proved to be the overall better hitter out of the two. 208 strikeouts for Aaron Judge.
Yeah, and that's going to be held against him. Now, I always love the fact that the BBWAA puts the balloting online so you can see who voted for the outliers here. Richard Griffin of the Toronto Star and Sam Mellinger of the Kansas City Star are the two voters who had Aaron Judge in first place. Interestingly enough, neither one of the Kansas City Star beat writers had Jose Altuve winning the MVP. Rustin Dodd of the Star gave his first place vote to Jose Ramirez of the Indians.
Friend of the show. Well, no, sorry. Friend of the gym class. He used to cover Kansas basketball for, or Kansas football.
That's what
for
I was
going to
say. I
Kansas
don't think
City
we've
Star.
Ever had Rustin Dodd on the program before.
Well, I just looked at Aaron Judge and I thought, yeah, he's in New York. He's in the big market. And there are going to be voters that give him that type of celebrity vote. What he did in the first half, what he did in the All-Star game. And I thought with the effect that he had on baseball in the first half of the season and the way he bounced back, not only in the second half, but in the playoffs, from a slow start to the second half, maybe he would get a few votes. But I go back to the fact that I think it was something like 67% of his at-bats ended in either a home run, a strikeout, or a walk. That's a staggering number, and I think the strikeouts were held against him. And Jose Altuve is such a popular player, and for good reason. And so if I go back and I think about it, that was clearly going to, if I had a vote, I would definitely vote for Jose Altuve.
Voting much more interesting over in the National League. Chris Bryant of the Cubs actually took home a first place vote. He was the 2016 NL MVP. Mark Bowman of MLB.com placed a first place vote for Chris Bryant. He had Stanton second on his ballot, followed by Joey Votto. What's really interesting here, it's never happened before, but a player getting a first place vote and not being listed on at least one other ballot. And Bryant was left off two of the ballots this year, and a lot is being made, not by me, I want to be very clear about that, but a lot is being made in various corners of the internet because one of the two writers who left Chris Bryant off their ballot happens to work for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Rick Hummel, who voted for Anthony Rizzo in 10th place ahead of his teammate Chris Bryant.
So he's getting shame for voting for one Cub over the other?
Bryant is on everybody else's ballot except for his and one other voter's. And I'm trying to find, because, like I said, the National League voting is all over the place here. But, of course, you've got people.
Oh, well. He put a Cub on there.
People are running to say that. And I see, look, the St. Louis and you comes out every once in a while. It's like when you've got the East Coast person who moves to Iowa to do the local sports.
No, I mean, I'm just not buying into the conspiracy theories.
They got the accent going. Look, Anthony Rizzo, what he did for the Cubs, I think he deserved recognition. So if it comes down to you have to vote for one over the other, I'm not going to bat an eye or lose any sleep over somebody saying, I'm going to give Rizzo the nut. Look, it's a 10th place vote. It doesn't matter. But I'm more interested in Mark Bowman putting Bryant. Now, I know why he did it, because if you look at Bryant's numbers, many of them are very similar to last year, and he won the award last year with similar numbers. But when you're the only guy, how do you think he feels today? The ballots are made public, and you're the only guy who had Chris Bryant getting a first-place vote.
Well, if you're anything like our friend of the show, Keith Law, he's probably happy about it right now. I don't know. I feel like some voters, and especially with these new statistics that everybody likes to come up with, their own little variation of statistics, whether it's sabermetrics or not, some voters like to rattle the cage a little bit. First place vote, I definitely, Chris Bryant, I mean, you look at his final numbers and he had a very good year. But the other three guys. I want to be very clear about this.
I'm not arguing for Chris Bryant. What I'm saying is when you look at his numbers, they're pretty close to last year when he won the award.
Yes.
So if I'm putting myself in Mark Bowman's head, maybe that's explaining the vote. Starting lineup is out for Iowa basketball tonight. It is the same starting lineup that Fran McCaffrey has been utilizing. He's got Luka Garza at center with Tyler Cook and Ahmad Wagner at the forward positions, and then Isaiah Moss stepping in at the guard along with Jordan Bohannon. Again, Connor McCaffrey out tonight. Originally, he had been bothered by an ankle. This time, they're saying he is under the weather with a little bit of an illness. So, Connor McCaffrey. Now, technically, I believe I saw Jeremiah Davis of the Cedar Rapids Gazette point this out. Technically, he still has his red shirt, but it's only a matter of time. It's just the fact that he hasn't been healthy, and now he's under the weather. That's the only reason why he's not playing at this point. The competition will get a little tougher for the Hawkeyes next week when they head off to the tournament that they're in. Iowa State wrapping things up against Appalachian State in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Iowa State looking as if they'll advance on the winner's side. Illinois State upset South Carolina earlier today in that tournament bracket. So I don't know what that does for Iowa State, what that means moving forward for them. But that game going on now on 1600 AM with Chris Williams and Brent Bloom on the call. Again, tomorrow I'm assuming we're going out at 6:43 flat for high school football. That's why I'm wrapping things up here. Scott Unash is at the Unidome in Cedar Falls, where Cedar Rapids Xavier is looking to bring home the Class 3A title. Join us tomorrow. Rob Howe from HawkeyeNation.com sits in for Alex. We'll talk with former Hawkeye quarterback and current San Francisco 49er C.J. Beathard. It's the KGYM road trip driven by Linder Tire from the Coach's Corner Sports Pub in Iowa City. See you then.